And welcome to the 296th edition of Money Matters, your economic forum. My name is Mark Cunaberty. Thanks for joining today. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investment, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Money Matters is about money. As money does matter, it matters when money affects us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. Controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. Controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Welcome. Thanks for joining me today. Thursday, November 7, 2019, 12:08 Pacific Standard Time in the year of our Lord. Thank you, thank you. Today's show is called Firewise Communities. And yeah, we do talk about the markets. We'll cover the markets real quick. The Dow sitting very close to and over a brand new high, 27,695.59, as I'm looking at it, up 203 points for sure. Other indices, sort of like supermarkets, the Dow is one particular supermarket, the NASDAQ is another, Russell 2000, S&P 500, there are others. The Dow is the most widely watched, but not necessarily the largest, only comprised of 30 stocks. And as we mention every year, every show, every year, well, we've had 295 shows, we're coming up on show 300, I got to think of what I'm going to do there. But 27,695, yeah, here we are, right, new high. The larger number above us, 27,695, would be 28,000. That is now regarded as a major resistance level. And below us, since we've closed over 27,000, the 27,000 mark, the large number, would be support below us. So we're right in the middle there, so maybe we'll hold that. Nobody can prognosticate where markets are going to go, of course. And that is, these technical resistance points are for the chartists that believe that those sort of things, you know, nobody can prognosticate where a market's going to go. But at 27,000 now, it's 27,701, the largest number above is 28,000, would be regarded by those believing such things as a resistance level. So we'll have to go up and over that. What's driving the market higher? It's hard to say. You know, you could say that the tariffs are going to be solved, the economy is good. I know there would be some out there that would debate that. So far, nothing really monumental on the impeachment front. And I've read a couple articles where, you know, the market really is not going to be looking at impeachment too much. Again, those are the opinions of the people that might write such articles. So we'll go ahead and see. We'll watch the market so you don't have to, and go on. So on investing, we have an offshoot of the show called Investing in Community. We're a nonprofit where we investigate and detail nonprofits, politicians with permission, of course, businesses, local businesses. And a big issue in our community, and indeed California, is fire insurance and fire. And so today, we're going to take an offshoot here, and we're going to, I've invited Mr. Bob Long. He is the chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. Bob, thanks for joining me today.
Well, it's nice to be here. I was a little worried you were going to ask my advice on financial investments. I mean, my theory is you buy high, sell low, and you can't go wrong.
There you go, right. Yeah. Okay, so Bob, this has been a real big thing. I am a licensed insurance agent here in California, so I have to put that disclaimer out there. Firewise Communities, you know, it's a big thing, of course, with all the wildfires. So let's start on what is the coalition of the Firewise Communities?
Well, I think we're somewhat unique in California. Almost every county in California has a fire-safe council. But I'm not aware of any other counties where the individual Firewise communities have banded together and formed an organization. I mean, we're not incorporated. I mean, we have a number. We're not a nonprofit. we're just the FireWise communities, and there's now 37 of us. We get together once a month. We support one another, and we try to educate ourselves in fire safe practices.
Is this a is this a national organization or just a statewide?
FireWise Communities is a the brainchild or the function of a national organization, NFPA, called the National Fire Protection Association. And it's a nonprofit that was started back east, and their purpose is to help educate the public in how to be fire safe. They take on other initiatives as well, conservation, safety, product safety, things of that nature. But we're most interested in their fire, work in fire prevention.
So is there a particular district that, that you're in charge of? Are you in charge of the whole state or just local?
No,
yeah, I was going to say. Is Nevada
no, I
County?
And I'm not in charge of anything. I
represent, Chairman sounds pretty important.
I know. It sounds really, really hot stuff. The pay is tremendous. No, we're just Nevada County. Both sides of the hill. Okay. We represent both sides of the hill. And then I forgot what I was going to say after
well,
that.
Well, are there coalitions in every county
no,
of the state?
No, not that. No, there are not. And I'm not aware that any other county has formed a coalition.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But we're hand in glove with the Fire Safe Council of Nevada County. And we're their boots on the ground. I mean, they're the ones that help create the FireWise communities, help get us the money needed in order to do the assessments to become a FireWise community. They're the ones that do the help with the education, things of that nature. They're a 401c3. But we're the boots on the ground. We're the ones talking with the FireWise communities. We're talking with the communities that want to become a FireWise community. We're out there talking with the road associations on what to do about their roads and things of that nature. And as an example, what a FireWise community is all about, I live in a FireWise community. And this morning, I spent my morning chopping down junipers. So you were asking about insurance, and one of our neighbors, she got that letter from the insurance company that says if she doesn't do X, Y, and Z by I don't know what date, they're going to cancel her, or excuse me, not renew her.
Right.
And so this morning, two of us spent our time creating what's called a mosaic out of her junipers. So we filled up one trailer load, and another trailer load will get filled up this afternoon. And she'll be, at least in my opinion, she'll be in compliance, and I presume she'll get her insurance renewed.
Now, in some of the higher brush areas, Marin County, I used to live there, Santa Cruz, Chico Paradise, Santa Rosa. Do they not have FireWise communities?
Oh, yeah, they do. Of course they
do. Okay.
Yeah, matter of fact, Marin County is our, what's the right word, our not nemesis, but our competitor as to who has the most FireWise communities.
Yeah, okay.
They were ahead of us at 35 communities. We're now up to 37.
Okay.
So we're two ahead of them, and we got 15 in the works.
Yeah, so, I attended the meeting night before last.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, and so I was there. It was the first meeting that I've attended, so I was remiss in going to those before. What makes a community? Is it a residential area? Is it an arbitrary boundary? Or how do you designate a community?
It is relatively arbitrary. It can be as small as the gazebos over behind the Kmart shopping lot, shopping center. I think they have 35 homes to Alta Sierra with, or no, Lake Wildwood, I think, is the best, with, I think, 2,500, 3,000 homes. So there is no prescribed number. We recommend that communities don't form unless they, I mean, 30 is a very small number, because you've got to get at least 4 to 5 people who are interested in forming a committee.
And do they, if I live on a particular XYZ street and I'm not in a particular neighborhood like Wildwood, and somebody asks me, do you have a neighborhood name? Do we make up our own, or how is that? Oh, you do.
Oh, yeah, you make up your own name. You know, I mean, most of the communities are sort of a recognized subdivision. So, like, I live in Sherwood Forest.
Okay.
You know, and that's in it. Okay. But we've added six other homes that are adjacent to Sherwood Forest that are not actually in the development of Sherwood Forest.
Okay.
6B Ranch, which is right across Auburn Road from us, they're a neighborhood, and I'm not aware that they're a homeowners association, but they're a neighborhood. Thoroughbred Loop would be another natural Firewise community. Some are road associations, and they form a committee. Some are HOAs, like Wildwood, Lake of the Pines.
Like the Cedars, perhaps?
The Cedars. Ananda.
So it could be a subdivision, like Cedars or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then let's say I was living outside the Cedars, a block down, and I knew the Cedars was Firewise, and I really didn't know anything about whether I particularly a block down from the Cedars was Firewise. Could I go to the Cedars and say I want to become the part of the community? Does each house have to obey or have to contribute to maintaining its property? And if you have, what happens if you have a guy in the middle that says I ain't doing anything?
Oh, well, that happens all the time. I mean, I heard of one homeowner, the community will remain nameless, who says, I don't want to clear my house. I want it to burn down, and then I'll move out of here. I'll collect the insurance and leave. I mean, that's a pretty negative attitude. But what happens is we try to look at natural boundaries. So we have actually expanded several of the communities where it was just, you know, why wasn't this cul-de-sac included? You know, why did we stop here? Why didn't we go one more road? So we just try to keep them manageable. Lake Wildwood, Lake of the Pines, if they didn't have an HOA, they wouldn't be manageable. It's hard. When you get beyond 200 or even 300 homes, it's hard to manage it, because part of the deal is you're supposed to have once a year we're obligated to have an educational event. Well, if you've got 300 homes, it's really hard to find a place to put 300 people. So, I mean, it's easy for me. In Sherwood Forest, we have 60 homes, and so one of the neighbors has a beautiful backyard, and we have potlucks in her backyard. But, you know, 60 homes is easy to deal with.
Is it, could you be a homeowner and not know you were in a Firewise community?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people are like that.
So I'm out on Meadow. Is there a particular name?
You got me.
Okay.
I don't know where Meadow is.
Okay. So somebody was interested in, let's say he has a house on Jones Street or wherever, and he says, well, I don't know if I'm in a Firewise community. I don't know anything about it. They can call, right? Is that the first step?
No, much rather they let their fingers do the walking and go to the website.
Okay.
So we have a funky website. It's a Google website, so it doesn't have a name. So you need to Google us. You look for Coalition, Nevada County Coalition, and we'll pop up. And then go to our website, and there's a map. Look at the map. It'll tell you if you're inside the boundaries.
So is it just Nevada County Coalition?
No, that'll bring us up, but Nevada County Coalition of Firewise Communities.
Okay, and then there'll be a link there that Google will probably locate, is that?
Yeah, you'll see us, and then you can click on the...
Then there'll be a map there.
And there's a map. Okay. It's a good website. It's a well-designed website.
And you click on the map, and you can find your street?
Yes.
Okay.
You can find... Now, you asked earlier if... we can drill down to specific street names, and it's a PDF file. So no, you can't, but you can see where it is, and you can see if you think you're inside the boundary, then you can contact us, and we can actually, we actually have professional map makers who map all the Firewise.
So I could call, my address is 15055 Long Street, and am I in a community?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say a person is in the community and didn't know anything about it, what would be his next step? He has to participate in at least some maintenance or?
Well, the idea is to be part of the community and, mm-hmm. and join in on the various projects. So in my community this spring, last spring, we decided we were going to clear the roads and create the defensible space on either side of the road that's necessary for emergency vehicles. And so everybody joined in and did it to their ability. In some cases, we worked together like we did today. In other cases, the neighbors just worked on their own. And then what we did as a group is we invited we hired the Fire Safe Council to come out and chip all the debris piles.
Oh, great.
We kept them busy for 10 hours chipping, mm-hmm. so which is a lot of chipping.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many tons of material we cut down, but that's what we did, and we did it as a group. It's always easier when you're working with people.
Sure. Community involvement is always easier when there's a lot of people suffering with
you. And then there's peer pressure.
Right.
A lot of our neighbors this year and throughout the community, you see it everywhere, worked on the land that is fallow, for the lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
So in our neighborhood, you saw a lot of young trees coming down. Anything smaller than 4 inches was chipped, and people were thinning out the vacant land so that it was fire safe.
What happens if somebody, I hear this a lot talking to homeowners, what if somebody says, well, my neighbor won't do anything? Do you have people that go door to door and try to do a little arm twisting?
So it's always best to be neighborly, mm-hmm. but I'll just jump to the end of the story.
Okay.
It is enforceable now.
Oh.
So, but let's go back to the start of the
okay.
story. The best thing to do is you knock on your neighbor's door and say, hey, I'm trying to create 100 feet of defensible space around my
mm-hmm.
house. The property line is 70 feet from my house. I need to work on 30 feet of your property.
Mm-hmm.
80% of the time, they're going to say, sure, go ahead, knock yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, you run into a person who is a obstreperous individual, and they choose not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So then what we do, if there's a FireWise community, we have a letter that we drop in their mailbox and say, you know, we're a FireWise community. We've had a defensible space advisor come out, and we recommend that you do X, Y, and Z. If they ignore that, some communities will put out a second letter. If they continue to ignore that, then the next step is you go to the county, to the Office of Emergency Services, and you report them. And then what will happen is a representative from Consolidated Fire. Consolidated Fire has the contract with Nevada County to provide defensible space inspectors.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a defensible space advisor. So I don't have a badge and I have no authority. But the inspectors do. They have a badge. So they'll come out and they'll cite you. And they will be specific, saying you have to do X, Y, and Z, and they give you 30 days to start the project.
Or
you get fined. Now, I forget exactly what the fine is, but it's in the neighborhood of $150.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose not to pay that, it gets added to your property tax.
Mm-hmm.
If after 30 days you choose to do nothing, you'll get a second letter saying you're naughty, naughty. Get going. And if they ignore that letter, the fine goes up to somewhere in the neighborhood of $300.
Okay.
Ignore that letter, it goes up to $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
Ignore that, it goes to enforcement. And there was an article in the newspaper, The Union, early on this year, and I can't remember exactly when, March or April, where a landowner ignored Consolidated Fire and did nothing, and so the county went out and abated their property to the tune of $40,000.
Mm.
And that was added to their property tax bill. Now, they got real upset, and they said, well, I could have done it for 12. Yes, you could have.
But you didn't.
Because when the county does it, number one, they have to use a licensed contractor who's bonded and insured. It has to be the prevailing minimum wage, and it has to be done to the letter of the law,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be a whole lot more expensive than if you hire your own contractor.
You're listening to Money Matters right here on KVMR FM, your community radio station, aired on about 65 other stations at some time or another, so you may be listening to this in an area that may not have a fire problem, right, if you're living out in Modesto We're speaking to Bob Long. He's the chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. So you have a homeowner, and he doesn't know if he's in a Firewise community. He's obviously interested, goes to the website, pulls up the map, says, I can, I cannot tell, maybe so. They give a buzz over there. They find out, no, you're not. Let's take that case. No, you're not.
They can contact the Fire Safe Council,
mm-hmm.
and they'll find the Fire Safe Council can be found at rufiresafe.com,
mm-hmm.
and they can leave them a message, and then they will get a response. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
either I'll respond or somebody will respond. And either give them a map or let them know they're inside a Firewise community.
Okay, so let's take the case where they're not. And you would say, well, start one, or your
sure.
neighbor is yeah. starting one. We have a list of addresses. You could have, say, what's your closest neighbor that's interested in doing this?
We have a map of another 39 communities
oh, okay.
that are interested mm-hmm. That are actually on the list mm-hmm. of becoming a Firewise community. In order to become a Firewise community, you have to have an assessment done, and that has to be done by a professional, a fire scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that costs money. And the county has been extremely generous. They funded 10 communities the first of this year, and they've given us funding for 15 more communities, and those communities will be done probably by June of next year. And then five communities that were HOAs or road associations raised their own money to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, So we can tell you if you're inside the boundaries of one of these 39 communities that's on the map, as it were, getting ready to become Firewise communities.
Would it be safe to say that if you were in a boundary that you may have been contacted already?
You should have been contacted. They'd be trying to contact you.
Okay.
Unfortunately, and actually we just did a communication survey. In fact, you saw it the other
mm-hmm.
night. And you'll see communities like mine, I have everybody's email address. And even if I don't, I can hire the grandkids across the street to go around and leaflet everybody. You get to a community like Banner Mountain, it's 300 homes, it's dispersed, and I don't know how many, they may have 50-60% of the email addresses. I mean, some people don't. I have one neighbor who simply does not want to be contacted. He won't answer his phone, he won't answer snail mail, and we don't have his email address. He just refuses to be part of the pack.
You could be a Firewise community and have a guy in the middle with
oh, yeah.
completely wooded over.
Oh yeah.
No help, and you just say, hey, he won't. That does that jeopardize the certification of the community if you've got one or two guys?
No, it doesn't. The certification indicates that you're active and you're working on creating defensible space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have somebody in the middle who is a hazard, the law... California state law 4291 states that you must have 100 feet of defensible space around your home. Everybody who's listening should go check the documents they signed when they bought their home. They'll see that they initialed a paragraph that says that they agree to CFR 4291, that they will create 100 feet of defensible space around their house. And so if your neighbor chooses to not do that, again, you go to the Office of Emergency Services. There's a radio button that says, I want an inspection. And when that button doesn't mean that I want one for me, it can mean I want one for my next door neighbor. And you simply indicate their address. And there's a free form paragraph that says, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
The website does ask for your name, address, telephone number, and email address, and it's not for the purpose of disclosing the whistleblower
sure,
in this case.
Sure.
And but OAS needs to know who's making the complaint.
And that's on the website of the Offices of Emergency Services. What would one look for once they get to that site? You said a radio button?
Oh, I call it a radio button. I know what you call it. It's a a hot link. I mean, it says.
It says.
Yeah, I mean, there's icons. There's mm-hmm. icons, and one of them says, I want an inspection.
Okay, and so.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
How do they get access to, say, this guy's got 50 acres behind you? And
well, 58, we only deal with 100 feet of space.
So yeah, but how does he get? How does an inspector get on the property? Let's say the guys
can't. They can't. What'll happen is this will be turned over to Consolidated. They'll send an inspector out, and then what happens is that inspector inspects the whole neighborhood. So that way, it masks who turned the recalcitrant individual in. So they may inspect 5, 6, 10 homes in the area. They do it from public space. So they do it from the street. They'll do it from a green space, or they'll do it if they knock on your door and say, "I'm here and this is what I'm doing. May I walk through your backyard?" They can inspect the neighbor from your backyard if they're given permission to be on your property.
If you've measured 100 feet from your property and it goes into the neighbor's property, as far as who's responsible for clearing that, I would imagine that the homeowner, even though the defensible space is not on his property, to get 100 feet in, then the homeowner that wants the 100 feet would probably be responsible for removing those trees, or could they force the neighbor?
Yeah, it's enforceable, number one, that the neighbor must allow you to create the defensible space.
At his cost?
Yes. Uh-huh. If it comes down to it, typically, again, it never gets to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in 95% of the cases, it never gets to that. I mean, so this new regulation in Nevada County went into effect in March. The Board of Supervisors signed this in March.
Of this year?
Of this year.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, and to the best of my knowledge, they currently have 270 active cases. I don't know how many households there are in Nevada County, but there's more than 1,000, huh? And so 271 is not very many. And so it doesn't get to that. It's neighbors helping neighbors. So
is it only the, you know, I've been at friends' houses and near my house, I look outside and let's say there is 100 feet of space. I don't think there is around my house. In most directions on my property there is, but in the back, you know, there's no. But if I look through and look like 300 feet back, it's like just a tinderbox down there. Do you address empty lots or just lots that are so large as just fallen trees all over? You don't gonna make the guy clear all his 9 acres, do you?
So the 100 feet is actually fire science. Mm-hmm. It's not a number. You go back far enough, you see 30 feet, then you see 60 feet. 100 feet is fire science. Mm-hmm. It's not a number that somebody came up with one night drinking coffee. The theory, the science behind it is that if there is an active fire 100 feet from your house, the radiant heat from that fire will not ignite your house.
Ah, okay.
That's why 100 feet. We can talk about what will happen over and above radiant heat.
Sure.
So that's why you have 100 feet. If the person with 50 acres, there are rules on the books for large parcels. They must maintain, and don't hold me to this, I think it's 50 feet, 50 feet of space around the perimeter of their property. That can be enforced by a fire marshal. They have to keep on private roads. They must maintain 10 feet of defensible space on either side of the road and a 15-foot overhead clearance along their property. That's part of PRC 4291 and is enforceable by the county. Neighbors must allow you to clear up to 100 feet onto the parcel next door. That's enforceable. So if push comes to shove and your neighbor chooses not to participate, then they'll be forced to participate, and then you as the landowner wanting the space have to share in half the cost.
Ah, okay.
That's in the code as well.
And the description of what the 100 feet could allow, manicured or, you know, hybrid plants that somebody's planted around the yard for decoration?
Yeah.
Where do you start to make is a photinia next to your house different than a wild cedar tree that is completely surrounded by 5,000 other cedar trees to go up in a moment's notice?
So some people think that we're going to come to their house as an advisor and tell them to cut down all their trees.
Right.
And that is the furthest thing from the truth.
Right, right.
All of us, well, I moved here because of the trees. Mm-hmm. I love the trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, my wife and I have lived on the coast our whole lives. And we came here and I said, oh my God, I can smell the pine trees. Let's buy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're here. So there's three zones.
Mm-hmm.
For 5 feet around your house, we recommend or ask for hardscape. The mm-hmm. insurance companies demand hardscape. Hardscape is concrete, bare dirt, gravel. You can have low plants that are irrigated, but it's hardscape. Mm-hmm. That's 5 feet around your house. Mm-hmm. From 5 feet to 30 feet is landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be an irrigated lawn. It could be a gravel patio. It could be small shrubs that are, actually, it doesn't matter how tall they are, but it's manicured shrubs. Mm-hmm. I suggest that everybody keep their manicured shrubs like a camellia so that there's at least 12 inches of space underneath so that you can keep the debris from underneath.
Right, I think.
You go, mulch is fine. You know, there's nothing wrong. Mulch does burn, but that's okay because it's a very low flame. And if the branches of your low trees are 12 to 14 inches off the ground, if you only have 3 inches of mulch, which is what is allowed, the flame isn't going to get up into the tree. 30 feet to 100 feet, we allow 4 inches of mulch, and it's not necessarily landscape, but you keep the trees spaced. We have brochures that we hand out. I believe that we ask that the canopies be no more than 10 feet apart.
Yeah, I saw that drawing where as you got farther out, you could allow them to get a little bit closer. What about these people that have... You know, I visit a lot of houses writing, you know, fire insurance, and I see like my house, I've got a 5 foot diameter oak tree.
Yeah.
15 feet from my wood deck.
Worry about oaks.
Oh, okay.
Oaks are hardwoods. The plants that we worry about are the softwoods, cedars, pines, and firs.
Oh gosh.
Those are the ones that we worry about burning.
Mm-hmm.
But even your oak tree, as long as you keep it limbed up 15, can you see my hands here? Limb them up 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is 15 feet off the ground, unless it's a small tree. Then we say one third the height of the tree. And then you throw an imaginary bubble around your house, and nothing should be inside that bubble. So if you have an oak tree that has branches hanging over your house like I do, you cut them. You cut the branches so that they're at least 10 feet above your house.
So no branches hanging over the house.
And with an oak tree, because I have that experience myself, I'd say 15 feet because that oak tree's going to grow.
Yeah. I've got the lot in back of me. You know, I don't own that lot. I look through probably 200 feet, and it's just piles of dead wood.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh. But I've got... in the area behind my house, and I see a lot of my people that I visit, you know, they have the small cedars and they're like boom, 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 right next to each other. And so they have this black, like they've been burned. I think it's some sort of disease. Yeah, you need to really get rid of those. Now, if somebody cuts those down and it falls on the ground, is that okay? Or you got to chop them up and bury them in the dirt? Or do they just rot away? Or you got to haul them away? Or
no, what I'm going to suggest you do is you haul those things to the road and call the Fire Safe Council and ask them to come out and chip it.
Oh, they will do that.
They have a chipping service.
Oh, okay.
Ask for a donation.
Mm-hmm.
It's $75 an hour for chipping. You'll find that most commercial chippers, most commercial organizations will charge anywhere from $100 to $150 an hour to do the same thing. They'll chip it and they broadcast the chips back on your property, but you get a pile of debris as big as this room we're in, and it might fill 3 garbage cans by the time you finish chipping
it. Right.
So, you cut them down, and and get them chipped.
Okay. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberdi. We're speaking with Bob Long, the chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. We'll take a side road here real quick as far as when people come to me and they're looking for fire insurance, they're saying, well, I did all this tree clearing and, it really didn't matter. And my response to that, maybe you can tell me this is the right response. My response is, it's your house. You're doing it for you. You're doing it to help the neighborhood, houses do survive a wildfire. And the more space you give, yours might be one that survives. So even though your insurance might not care, you're still doing it for you to give yourself at least a fighting chance. Would that be a correct assessment?
We have that example right here in Grass Valley. Just go out to the fairgrounds by Lyons Lake. And 2 years ago, when we had the fire here, if you stand with your back to Lyons Lake and look across the street, there used to be three homes there.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And a year ago, there was only one. Mm-hmm. And what happened is the fire was occurring on, and I just lost the name of the...
McCourtney?
Well, it was off McCourtney, mm-hmm. but it was the neighborhood, to the south of McCourtney.
Is that Sherwood Forest?
No, not us. We were evacuated, but it wasn't us. Okay. Anyway, there were three homes right across from Lyons Lake. Two of them burned down. The fire department looked at those two homes and said, you know what? They're going to burn down. They went to the house in the middle and saved the house in the middle because that one was fire safe.
Okay.
I have a nephew who is a firefighter on the east side of the mountains in Washington State, and he's been on fires in Montana and some of the some of the states to the east. And he says his captain has a clipboard and a checklist, and there's 20 questions. You need 10 points to pass. They see they're in a neighborhood where there's an ongoing fire. Mm-hmm. You only get 9 points out of the 20. They go to the next house and save it. So, yeah, it matters.
What about, my particular house? My house is built up against property land, and my propane tank is literally 10 feet from my garage.
Yeah.
They had me weed whack.
You're supposed to have 10 feet of defensible space around that tank.
They had me weed whack all the vinca, green vincas. They weed whack all that, and it's surrounded by photinias. So
they're supposed to have 10 feet around the...
Yeah.
Propane tanks, only Arnold Schwarzenegger can shoot a propane tank and have it explode.
Yeah, they're pretty durable.
Yeah, it doesn't happen.
They just pop, right?
Yeah, well, they can pop, but typically they don't explode like you
see
it happening.
They have a relief valve, don't they?
They do. Mm,
yeah. Okay.
And then actually the ends of the tank are designed to pop off.
Oh, okay.
But with tremendous heat. And I wouldn't be standing by one in a fire.
But, right. sitting on one like a horse.
They're not going to explode.
Okay. We have, Bob, I'm going to open up the phone lines if the people want to call. Yeah, please.
Take 3 minutes.
Sure,
there's a couple of hot buttons while we're talking about this.
Go.
So we talked about radiant heat earlier. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So radiant heat isn't what starts houses on fires in a conflagration like you had in Paradise. It's embers. Mm. A huge, I don't know the exact number, nobody does, but it's somewhere between 70% and 80% of the fires in a wildfire are started by embers.
Flying embers.
And embers can fly a mile. They can fly 2 miles. We have a video on our link, our website, showing what an ember storm looks like. Mm. And the nearest thing you can imagine is a hail storm in the Rockies, if you've ever been in one. I mean, that's what it looks like.
Biblical proportions.
Absolutely.
Right, exactly.
So there's things you need to do as a homeowner, and they're very, very easy to do. You keep the pine needles and leaves off your roof.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure you clear them out of the valleys and the swales in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Get covered gutters. If not, clean your gutters all the time, because that's a place where fires start. You never, never, never store anything underneath your deck. Concrete and dirt get stored underneath the deck, nothing else.
No wood, people pile.
Yeah. No.
No firewood pile up against the house?
No firewood. Firewood is 30 feet from the house. You need to actually screen underneath your porches, and they have to be screened with 1/8 inch wire wire cloth.
You know, I was at that meeting, and I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
That's fine.
And I want you to go on. After that meeting, you know, I went home, and I have this old wood lattice all around my deck. Now, I've cleared all that, and I thought, you know, I've got a handyman right now there putting on some new deck work, and I was thinking, you know, I should just have him tear that down. Now, one of the women there were presenting the non-wood lattice, but you're suggesting you could use that, but you also want the screen behind it. So the lattice is for decorative, but the screen behind it.
One of the things when the insurance companies go out to your house mm-hmm. to inspect, they require 1/8-inch screen.
So if a guy has a 6-foot deck off the ground, he should have that real hard wire all the way to the ground, the way around, so we don't get stuff flying in there. Now, I know one of the things that's really important on the insurance form is roofs under 25 years. Old or house under 25 years. There's been a lot of homeowners that have been talking to me about this. Some people are showing me composite shingle roofs that are 20 years old. Where's the danger with an older composite shingle roof? Because as far as I know, those don't ignite. So where's the danger?
I'm not aware of a danger. As long as it's a composite, fire-resistant composite roof, mm-hmm. that's a check mark on our list, and that's it. We don't check for age.
Okay. I know the insurance companies really do. They want to see under 25 years.
But I don't know if that's for fire issues or water damage. You know, they're mm-hmm. worried about water damage.
Well, the Cal FAIR program is just wildfire, and they're really, really sticker about that.
And
you don't see any cedar shake shingle anymore.
Oh, my God, no, I hope not. I don't know. The CCNRs in our neighborhood, which mm-hmm. was started in 1965, mm-hmm. requires cedar shake roofs.
We have a phone call coming in. Hold on. Good afternoon. You're live on the air with Bob Long, the chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. Keep it short. Who am I speaking to?
Hello, Brian Johnson.
Hi, Brian.
At King Bee Roofing over in Auburn, no big deal. But I will tell you this. I have had in six months mm-hmm. to a year, 30 calls from people in the fire district areas, Meadow Vista, Colfax areas, that said, oh, my insurance is going to cancel me because they said my roof is older than 20 years. And I go, well, let me look at it. And if I determine that it's within 20 years old, they say, or within 20, they go, okay, we'll give you insurance. But if I say, oh, no, it's all way over 20 years, they go, insurance tells them, will you put a new roof on? And then I end up putting a new roof on. Sorry. I'm walking away from the phone.
There you go. Okay. Did you have a specific question for Mr. Long?
Just heard him say what he just said, mm-hmm. and I don't agree. Oh, no. If it's we don't care about the age of the roof. Well, I'll beg your pardon. I've had 30 calls mm-hmm. within a year's time that said, can you just come and inspect my roof and tell me if it's 20 years old or older? And
right.
I say, yeah.
All right. Well,
and
thank
you. If it's older, they say, can you put a new roof on? Because insurance won't cover me unless it's within 20 years old.
All right. Thank you for your phone call.
Okay. You tell him to keep to the truth.
Okay. I will know that the specific age from Cal FAIR is 25. You are live on the air with Bob Long from the Coalition of Firewise Communities. What's your name?
My name is Doug.
Hi, Doug. And turn down your radio in the background. We have a little bit of delay. What would you like to ask, Mr. Long?
There we go. Yes, I would like to ask the following question. We had our original insurance canceled. We've had the house for 20 years. It was built about 7 years before that. So the house is now about 27 years old. It has a composite roof, which I gather is now a no-no because of the age. But more important than that, I can think of 10 different reasons from having listened to the show why we're not going to pass for the Cal FAIR thing that we had all went to a lot of trouble to arrange. We mm-hmm. sent in the money and everything else, and now they're sending out an inspector, and I'm certain we're going to fail. Now, that means that we'll go back to Chase Bank, and Chase Bank will then do their version of insurance, which I gather is even double what the previous one was, which was double. And I'm wondering, what happens if Chase Bank looks at it and says, oh, no, this doesn't pass inspection?
Well, thank you for your phone call for sure. Bob, we can't say what Chase Bank would do or not do, but am I getting the impression that as far as a composite roof, that is really not a problem, even though it might be a little bit older?
We're not. The training that we get mm-hmm. from CAL FIRE does not discuss the age of the roof. I mean, obviously, okay. the roof needs to be in good condition. Mm-hmm. When we look at roofs, we're looking for places where the needles and leaves will collect, where there's gaps in the roof, where there's places that would create a fire hazard. So the age of the roof is not something that we discuss when we go out for an advisory visit. You probably know better than I about the FAIR plan. Now, my understanding on the FAIR plan is the inspector is going out for two reasons. One, to see the whether or not the house is fire safe. Number two, is there several specific things that will cause you not to get the FAIR plan. One of them is having a single family dwelling with four families living in it, having an illegal enterprise going on at the house, having deferred maintenance such as no roof or, you know, some kind of physical problem. You know, they're not going to insure your home if it's not in good shape to begin with.
Sure.
So they're going out primarily to look at that. Then they do ask you to do certain things about fire safety. Frankly, and I get a lot of phone calls, okay, I've not heard of anybody not getting the FAIR plan.
Right, right. So far, that's a true statement.
Yeah.
If I was to ask you, is it easy to say or possible for you to say, what is the number one danger to a homeowner? Is it defensible space? Is it screened in? What is the number one
threat? It's the embers.
Embers are number one. And if it's 100 feet defensible space, but these things can fly 2 miles, what would be the most effective way to
cleaning out the gutters,
okay.
keeping the roof clean,
mm-hmm.
nothing underneath the deck.
Okay.
If you're told to evacuate, mm-hmm. you take everything off the deck that's flammable. So either you put mm-hmm. it inside the house or you throw it. What the fire department will do is they'll throw it 30 feet away from the house.
Oh, they will. Okay.
You don't want to have shrubs hugging the house where fires can start. When the wind blows, watch what the wind does. And then when you're doing your yard cleanup, you go to those places and make sure they're absolutely clean, because that's where fire embers will go. Make sure all the vents in your house have 1/8-inch screening on them. That's very important.
Because the ember will be sucked into the attic.
It'll get sucked into the attic.
Okay.
What I did on my porch, and I'm a backyard mechanic, right? Mm-hmm. So I just put hardy board up.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of the wire mesh, instead of a lattice work, I just put up hardy board. It took my son and I a day to do it.
So screening around an open deck that's really effective, because I know a lot of people I go to is like open decks, they store their canoe under there. You know.
The other thing you do, two other things that are extremely important, and as an advisor, it's amazing how many homes I can't find when I go looking for them. Get the appropriate reflective sign.
Right.
They're also sold.
That has your address?
That has your address on it.
Okay.
They're also sold at the Fire Safe Council.
Okay.
And then lastly, sign up for Code Red.
Yeah, okay.
Code Red.
Sure.
And that's, and I know.
Give us a quick information on how to do that.
Go to mynevadacounty.com, search for Code Red. That is one of the best web pages I have ever seen. It'll lead you right through it. When you do that, be sure you put, there's 2866 numbers that Code Red uses. You put both of those in your directory so that there's, when you get a call, a name pops up. It says Code Red.
Mm.
And then you put those in your favorites so that when you put your home phone on Do Not Disturb, your favorites ring through, even on a Do Not Disturb. So
okay.
at night,
okay. So if they Google up Code Red Nevada County, they can go that way. And then there's 2866 numbers that you plan into your contacts and as
put
a favorite.
Put in your contacts, yeah.
Okay, so you see. Okay. And then once again, somebody wants to start the process. They say, I heard their own radio show. I am interested. Their first step is?
Go to rufiresafe.com. Go to leave a message and tell them what you want.
Okay, are you firesafe.com? Okay. Did you want to give a phone number? Probably the website, right?
Yeah, the website. I don't think I want to give my phone number.
Bob, did you want to add anything else? And, you know, I'm going to judge the amount of emails that are coming in from this show. I'm thinking we might want to do one more.
Sure.
It's such a hot topic, you know.
I'll ask
program director if we can have you on back on in 2 weeks. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah,
I
can bring company that'll, you know, expand on what we can talk about.
So, maybe someone from the
bring someone from the Fire Safe Council
or fireman or fire chief.
Oh, yeah.
That would be good. Okay. Anything else you want to add before I let you go?
No, I think we
got you off the hot seat.
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered most things.
Okay. Website one more time. RUfiresafe.com. Any other website?
And then Code Red through mindnevadacounty.com, and
right.
Get those reflective signs out there.
Okay, mindnevada.com. Mindnevada?
County.
County.com. Okay. You have been listening to show 296, Firewise Communities. We've been speaking to Mr. Bob Long, the chairman of the Coalition of Firewise Communities. And you do hold meetings once a month, at least the big meeting, but then the Firewise communities have their own meetings, right?
Right. Yeah, the coalition meets on the first Tuesday of every month at the real estate offices on Crown Point Circle.
That's the first Tuesday, 5:30 to 7:30. It was a long meeting.
It was
a long meeting. Yeah,
yeah, they're long.
No snacks, no drinks, nothing. It was brutal there, Bob. Next time I'm bringing a box of peanuts.
Our budget is huge, you know, Mark. I mean, it's huge. It's as big as the pay I get.
Sure. Okay, I got to thank Mr. Bob Long. Thank you very much for joining us. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional. Before making important investment decisions, I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Views expressed today are my opinions only, or the opinions of the guests that I might have in the studio. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge's station or staff members or underwriters. However, today, recommending on fire safe practices is probably highly recommended by anyone that is fairly normal. Bob, thank you very much, you guys. Our website is agratamoneymanagementradio.com. As you can hear a copy of this show in about a week and a half after it's approved from regulators. And I'm really thinking that I'm going to have Bob and another cohort of his on in another 2 weeks, because this is an ongoing thing. And let's get it addressed before we come into another season. Bob, have a great day. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Great.
God bless
here.
Everybody.
Don't get me back to good.